If you're enjoying this independent podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you could take a few moments to do a review, like, share and subscribe. And if you'd like to see extra content and show your support, head to the Patreon. The link is in the show notes. You've come along on this ride with me, and you're really hearing it all behind the scenes because I wanted you to experience, as close as you can, what I went through. This isn't my story, I'm just your guide, but through my eyes, ears and voice, I hope you can have a greater understanding of this murky world of narcissistic abuse. As you know, I've had to do this story back to front so my cover wasn't blown. But I've also deliberately not delved into the nitty-gritty of the narratives of his victims, including Richard's story, because this crime is so nuanced, complex, and as Sam described himself, as almost being impossible to describe unless you've lived it. So I needed you to really understand the end before you hear the beginning. The voice of the victim you've heard so far is just one of many. To avoid confusion, I'm going to call her Anne from now on. That is not her name. There's no way to shield her identity from her abuser. He knows who she is. She would show her face, but we've advised her not to. She would even go to the police or any court in the world, but she's from Russia, and that is currently not an option. Anne wasn't the first whistleblower. It was another victim who reached out and then connected Mark with the others. Interestingly, Sam's belief that being featured in Mark and Scott's documentary was the ultimate validation of him has turned out to be the catalyst for his destruction. I left it a couple of weeks before doing the proper interview with Anne, which actually took several days. And I began by asking her what she thought when I appeared on the screen beside Mark.
I felt like, you know, kind of, first of all, I really, really trust Mark. So, first of all, I saw Richard next to him. Because, well, I never met Richard in my life. We never met personally. Never mind what Vaknin says to all the people around that I met with Grennan, that we arranged some, you know, gang stalking. It's all nonsense. We never met with Richard personally, never. And we never Zoomed with Richard. We just were talking sometimes on the phone or via messages. So first I saw Richard and Mark, and it was like, you know, very trustworthy ambient. And then he told me, I'm going to introduce you to someone I really, really trust. And if Mark says I really, really trust, it means he really, really does. So I knew there going to be someone who I also can really, really trust. And then I saw the beautiful lady. So, and, you know, and then you told me what you told me. And you were like really a true warrior to me, because to go there to without having fear, being so brave, so courageous. I think it's time to stop being afraid, the time to stop being ashamed, the time to stop feeling senses of guilt. Because when you are faced with the true evil, and Sam is a true evil, it's important to be who you are without being afraid and ashamed of who you are. Because that's what true evil counts on. He counted on that all of us, all the women, we will be silent, we will be ashamed and afraid. And when I saw you and when I heard what you told me, I felt huge relief.
I'm going to rewind you back to the beginning. Tell me when you first came across Sam Vaknin, what you thought of him, and how you managed to end up having therapy sessions with him.
I was having, a life crisis, and I was looking for help. I had a therapy session with one of the therapists here in Russia, and he told me about narcissistic abuse and cluster B personality disorders, which I never heard before. Because I'm totally not into the subject, so it was like something new for me. And he advised me a book, and this book was full of Sam's quotes. Actually, this book is based on Sam's Malignant Self-Love book. And I was thinking like, if I met people who are narcissist in my way, as far as the therapist talked to my therapist back then. And Sam is writing here that he's the expert on the subject, that he is a narcissist himself, so who also has introspection, which is quite rare, right? And who can really describe everything from the point of view of being a narcissist himself and of being an expert on the topic. And I decided to find him and to reach out for help, because I thought he's going to be the one who will help me. So I wrote him an email, and he just sent me a couple of links, and he refused to take me as a patient. As I understood later on, with other women, this was his tactics, you know, like, so beg, please, you know, you need to beg to become my client, something like this. So I wrote another time, and another time I sent him about three emails altogether. And then he agreed to have a therapy session with me, but I didn't want to go on therapy. This was not my idea. Actually, I wanted his advice. But in the middle of the first therapy session, he told me, oh, look, you are extremely sick. You are extremely, extremely sick. You need help. You need prolonged help. So if you want to get healed, I remember this word, healed. If you want to get healed, here I am, offering you help, but you need to become my therapy client and to work with me as a therapist. I remember I asked him if everything I'm telling him was confidential. He told me that and also wrote me an email that everything was confidential between me and him. And we started having therapy sessions. In about 2-3 weeks' time, I was thinking of him as the most brilliant genius in the whole world. I felt myself extremely lucky that he took me as his client. And I was really, really elated. In about 1 month time, he told me that his wife is listening to all my therapy sessions. That was a bit of a shock for me, because this was never agreed. But I couldn't object, because for me he had already become kind of a superstar, you know. And I couldn't imagine my life without his advice, because if I had some problems, some trouble, some inner conflicts, I knew I could write to him and say, look, Sam, I need additional hour of therapy because I'm having some kind of, you know, problems, troubles, whatever. And he told me that Lydia is his kind of assistant and trustworthy partner, and Lydia is always there. So I agreed, I didn't argue. Then about 6 months, after 6 months' time, he told me that he can't continue being my therapist anymore, and he dropped me on the spot. Like a hot potato. I remember, you know, he said, call me as soon as possible. So I called him and he said, look, that's it. I can't be your therapist anymore. I said, why? What's happened? Because I'm afraid to start having problems with taxes. He told me, I don't pay taxes in any country where I live because I have kind of special status, but you are paying me too much. We are having too many hours. So I'm afraid I will start having problems. So that's it. I will cut therapy from now on. And I remember I was in a state of shock and panic and horror and terror. Like, how come? On the spot, immediately, that's it. And I agreed. I said, okay, Sam, I understand. And then 5 minutes later, minutes, I received a message from him. Call me back again. I called him back. He said, no, I changed my mind. We still can continue our work. And I would receive every time after the therapy would end, the session would end, I would receive from him the message like, alert, alert with caps, alert, credit note, you have less than 120 minutes left to your credit, which meant that I would need to run to the nearest Western Union office to make another transfer, another payment, or there would be CC and Link, I think. And he would all the time make crazy making. No, don't pay with Western Union this time. Pay with CCN. No, not with Link, with Western Union. And it was like, you know, insanity. So the therapy would continue. I would need, you know, it was like a drug already. I would need more and more hours with him. I would be on a daily basis talking to him. And then he tried to invite me in May. He wrote to me the email, because what he did in sessions, he was all the time like splitting me in two people.
I'm going to paraphrase what she says next, because she says her own name so many times. Sam split her into the old Anne and new Anne. Old Anne is self-destructive, filled with self-hatred and insecurity. She must die. New Anne is like a newborn. She doesn't know anything about life and how the world functions, and only he has the keys. This is me speaking as Isla now. Doesn't that sound positive? It's like new year, new you. But the truth is, he was killing her autonomy, her ability to choose or trust herself. This is the hostile takeover, dressed up as healing.
So just be by my side, hold my hand. And I know it's very difficult. He wrote me an email, actually. He wrote to me, I know how horrible you must be feeling because your old life is totally destroyed, like in our sessions. So if you are in a state of horror, please just take tickets and come here and visit me. Something rang like alarm, like something's wrong with this email. So I answered to him like, okay, thank you very much, blah, blah, blah. But of course I didn't go because I thought it was a bit unusual. But when we continued having therapy, he insisted that I come to Skopje to meet him personally, face to face, because he said we would need the final act of intense therapy, 8 hours a day, 5 days in a row. So I would need to travel to Macedonia. And he insisted that I would bring only cash with me. So I brought cash. You know, it's weird, it's bizarre, but this was already the time when I couldn't say no to him about anything. For example, I brought cash. I had bank cards and cash with me. And in cash, it was about, I think, 10 or 12,000 euro, something like this. And he told me, well, you can give me all your money. I will put it as a credit for the next therapy sessions. I remember I was thinking to myself, what next therapy sessions? If this is the final therapy sessions we are going to have. But I couldn't say no to him. So I remember I gave him all the money I had with me. And I was thinking like to myself, the first 2 hours of intense therapy, what to do if my cards don't work? Because I was left without money at all, you know, only with my cards. But what if that, and I was a bit, you know, thinking like, but I couldn't say no. And Lydia, of course, was present during all the time. She was taking pictures of me, pictures of our therapy. So he said that it's a rule that it's an obligation I must agree with, that Lydia should be present during all the therapy sessions. So she was there. It was also a bizarre thing that we would end therapy about 8 o'clock every day, and I would take them for dinner. We would have dinner with Sam. He would be with me and Lydia for about 1 hour. He would entertain me with stories from his past life in Israel, from, you know, and then he would stand up and leave. And Lydia would take me around until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. So basically she didn't let me sleep at all. From one pub to another, I remember she took me to some nightclub, and I was so tired because I would wake up at 7 a.m., you know, shower, breakfast, everything. Then at 10 a.m. would start therapy. Therapy was like nonstop. Then small coffee break, then another 4 hours of therapy, then dinner. And I was like without strength by the end of the day. But she would continue this role of, you know, taking me around Skopje. And what they also did, and I already didn't pay attention because I was extremely tired all the 5 days, extremely elated that the great Sam Vaknin is here and I can be in his, you know, ambient and observe him. And he's my therapist and I'm extremely, like, the chosen one. And they would start fighting in front of me, but in a really bad way. And I would feel awkward. Sam would notice that and he would tell me, come on, don't be embarrassed. You should accept me and Lydia as your extended family. Think of us as your father and mother, substitute father and substitute mother. Do you remember when you were a child, your parents sometimes were fighting? Well, he knows that from my therapy with him. So think of me and Lydia as if we are your substitute parents. I'm your father, Lydia like your mother. So don't worry, just consider this. And so this was my therapy session in Skopje.
So sorry to interrupt you. There's so many things though that you've said there that I want to just acknowledge. And I know that this is a wild and twisting tale. And it's really important for you to take us through all, but I want to just have a few little marker points. So from the offset, this is an author who's being quoted in someone else's book, an expert. And as you said, fascinating to hear from the person with the actual self-awareness of being a narcissist themselves. So he's already on a pedestal. He's already credible and respected. And your own therapist suggesting you read a book that he's then quoted in, of course.
Yes, he's already the figure of authority.
Exactly. So figure of authority. Telling you that he won't take you on as a patient. Well, of course, that's going to make it even more high value. Yeah. And then telling you that, well, he doesn't normally take on therapy clients, he just has 2 years, but if you're special enough, if he thinks you're an interesting enough human being, if you're intelligent enough, so then, you know, you are pulled into the trap more and more. He misdiagnosing you, which we will get onto, but him telling you you've got borderline personality disorder, you're not going to doubt that because of all the things that have happened, you know, it's like if you went to an oncologist and they said you had cancer, you wouldn't question them. You'd say, right, and then this is what you need. You need chemotherapy. And what he said to you is you need intense therapy. So again, you're trusting that. And what I'm hearing from you is what he did then was a big exercise in gaining trust, which is all the therapy sessions. While he's earning a lot of money from you, you're becoming completely reliant, and he's made you reliant on him by design. But then what he does is pushes boundaries and creates new normals for you. So people listening might say, well, when they hear some of the awful things that happen, it'll be like, well, why didn't you just stop? Well, this is the important part. The devil is in the detail of this is a long period of time of him becoming such a key, if not the key figure in your life.
The key figure, yeah.
Hero worship, trusting him absolutely with your life. And even though these odd things happened, for example, I'm sure if on your very first session with him, he said, my wife Lydia's in the background listening, you'd have been a bit freaked out and probably it wouldn't have continued.
Right, right, right.
But the bargaining tool is you've already seen his worth. So even though this isn't normal, this is weird, and a real breach of trust, actually, you know that you can't continue with this person who is the key figure, who's made himself that, without her attendance. And the same again, this weird stuff that happened when you went there, your body was telling you, this is a bit odd even going there, I'm a bit reluctant, but okay, let's just go and get this done. This will be the final act. And then how odd, it's like he entertained you for the hour of dinner and then removed himself again for you to desire that and his company even more.
The name for that, it was like Sam's Stories. I was looking for it for the evening to listen to some stories. Later, also it was like, Sam, please tell me more stories about your life. It's so amazing. It's so full of, you know, events. You are, because the way he lives is so unprecedented, Ayla. But the way he makes you believe in his lies is unprecedented too. And everything is covered with the sugar powder. It's called I Never Lie. But literally, he lies about everything and anything in his life. And even though his stories seemed really insane and crazy, it's like, you know, some adventures in the most crazy book. I trusted them because he never lies, because he's an authority figure, because he's an expert on the topic, and because he's genius with 190 IQ, and, you know.
I absolutely understand and can see the path of events, the sequence of events, and why they unfolded the way they did. He almost targets, it's part of his game, is to target the most intelligent. That's, you know, you're a easy prey isn't as satisfying, but someone of you that would take so long to lure in is a higher value. But let's return to the narrative of you're in Skopje, you're having these sessions. She is weirdly taking you out, out clubbing, and I'm sure you probably just wanted to go to your bed and be awake and get the benefit of your therapy. But this is, again, all by design. So what happened then?
After our Skopje intense therapy was over, I came back. I thanked them and I came back to Russia. And what followed then really kind of shocked me, because he started to basically, you know, kind of harass me. I would receive hundreds of emails, messages, Viber messages, WhatsApp messages, messages on the phone, like, we should meet again. We should definitely meet again. I could never imagine I would find someone so interesting, so intelligent, so brilliant. And it's very difficult for me to find people to talk to. And now that I have constructed the new, you're like my creation. You know, like in the Bible, he would compare himself to God. You're like in the Bible. Please don't just disappear. I want to be sure that you are happy. I want to be sure that your life is satisfied with all your needs. I want to be there, being your safeguard. And he started to invite me all over the world. Please, could you join me and Lydia? We are traveling to London. Then he would travel to Zagreb, I think, in Croatia. Then he would travel to Montenegro. And I was all the time, I kept saying no, 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 please, Sam, no, no, no. And the more no's he would receive from me, the more insistent he would become. And then I said, I came up with an idea. I said, look, Sam, I don't feel comfortable to travel somewhere with you and Lydia. But if you want, you can be my guests. You can one day visit Russia. Maybe, you know, the next year or somewhere, you know, like, to be kind of polite. And he immediately took this offer and said, yes, we are ready to come in a week time or in 2 weeks time. It was kind of shock. So I said, okay. He asked me to pay for the tickets and the hotel, because he said he will help me to... He said, since we are coming, I would be very happy to see your family and to help you more with your husband, with your family. I would need to observe you, like your family dynamics. And this will be kind of therapy too. That's why you would have to pay me additional 10,000 euro for that. But this will not be therapy like usual therapy. I will be just observing and then giving you advice how to be better mother, better wife, better, you know. So you would need to pay me 10,000 euro for that. You would need to pay my tickets and for Lydia and accommodations and so on. I agreed. So they came to Russia, and this was never, never ending my never-ending story began since there. I remember when we had, because we traveled to Sochi, and in Sochi I remember we had like a session with me and Lydia already after he observed the dynamics within my family. And we sat, three of us, he was in front of me, I was in front of him, Lydia was on my left, and then suddenly, quite all of a sudden, Lydia stood up, took the chair, threw the chair at him, started to shout, curse, you know, like, fuck you, you son of a bitch. It was so out of the blue, I couldn't understand what was happening. I was like, you know, like, what did I do? What did he do? He didn't do anything. What happened? And she ran away. She ran away, and we were in a hotel with them. So she ran away. He said, no, please, let's continue. I stood there. I sat there to continue. And then suddenly he said, no, I can't continue anymore any session with you, because when Lydia is like this, I feel abandonment anxiety. I feel so horrible. Lydia is like my mother. Lydia is everything to me. We need to go and look for her.
Anne went to search for Lydia and found her in the swimming pool.
I said, please talk to me. What did I say? What did I do? And then I started asking Sam, and he said, don't you realize what's happening? I said, no, what's wrong? He said, well, I will tell you later, but I just want you to know that you are becoming more and more important in my life. I said, well, I understand, I know, you told me I'm your client who you think to be intelligent enough to talk to you. No, it's not that. And he was like putting those sleeping bombs, you know, inside you that will be activated one day and will be like a total attack. So I felt like I'm the chosen one to have unique access to Sam's mind. And to Sam's knowledge, and to Sam's brain, you know, this genius. And I wanted to share him with other people. In other words, to help other people.
She was so convinced of his brilliance as a therapist, she started recruiting new patients from her own social circle. That wasn't enough. Sam wanted her to arrange seminars and lectures and media appearances for him in Russia. She was becoming his promoter.
My only focus of attention and life and my existence was to promote Sam. To make everything possible and impossible for Lydia and Sam to come back so that I could again listen to his stories. I could again spend time with him. I could again ask for advice, because by that time he sent me an email. I also have it. And he's writing there that since now, I have lifelong limitless voucher for his sessions free of charge. So you see, I'm lucky enough to have lifelong voucher from Vaknin for sessions free of charge. So in case you need, let me know. I can share with you the voucher. So I started to really do everything to promote him. I was dealing with the magazines, arranging his interviews, photographers, arranging the venues for his lectures, arranging cold therapy seminar, collecting psychologists, psychiatrists, groups of people, advising him to people, finding him clients. I was working for him 24/7, you know. And when they arrived for the second time, it was already kind of seminar, cocktail party for them, a lot of clients, a lot of articles. He was interviewed. He was becoming like celebrity here. I was very happy. I could make him happy, because he kept on telling me, you know, I never felt happiness in my life. I never knew what happiness is. For the first time, I'm happy. You have this power of the goddess, because I was in the grave when you reached out to me, and you took me out of the grave. You put life into me. Like I saved you, you saved me.
Because his life, when you learn about it, despite, you know, seeing someone online is not the reality of them, and someone, using his brain and passing on all this information, which is truly fascinating about narcissists. What people don't know that he has, despite draining a lot of women of money, he lives a pretty poor existence, very unglamorous. It's pretty much him and his wife in a small apartment, and him coming to, for all expenses paid, plus extra money, to come into your life, which is a whole nother world. I've seen the photograph of you and some of your friends and Lydia, and he's standing in the middle, surrounded by beautiful women, beautifully dressed. All of you look like you've got, you know, you're financially secure, shall we say. And he wouldn't have known what hit him. Before we go on, can I ask, what did your family think of him when he was doing his observing? I'm assuming that you've told them, I'm extremely lucky because I've got this world-leading expert, a genius, and his wife. This might be a bit odd, but they're going to come here, so I want you to treat them with respect. But how did the family respond to him?
My husband is one of the most intelligent people I have ever met in my life, really. I'm very proud to be his wife. So he immediately told me on the spot, he's a fraud, he's a scammer, just stay away. But he really loves me so much that when I told him, I said, look, but I'm learning from him. Narcissism is such an amazing topic. It's so interesting. So he said, okay, you can learn from him, but just be very careful because he's not what he says he is. With time, I'm going a bit in advance, but with time, Sam succeeded to try to convert even, you know, kind of to make friendship with him, even though he never succeeded, but he tried to. And as to my daughter was very young, she was only 10, so she liked him because he knows to make cute faces, to make children fall in love with him, kind of, you know, he's like an old daddy telling stories and so on. So, but I would also like to make one comment about what you just said, that he's online presence is, yes, like he's an expert on the topic and so on, but what people don't know is not only that he has this kind of existence you've just described, but what people don't know is that all his online presence, everything, every single video, every single article, every single post on Instagram, all this is a dissection room, is a dissection theater, because it's all based on this or that victim who is being killed now, psychologically, emotionally, you know, mentally destroyed. So what he does is that he's sharing the experiments he's performing on humans. This is human experiments. It's awful. It's awful what he does.
You can basically follow what he is doing at any given moment based on the videos. Now, and I'll just interject briefly. We saw this absolutely happen live time with, after I met him, when the video comes out, it is 100% directed at me. And people watching it will just think, oh, this is the topic of the week. But the topic of the week happened to mention documentary teams, do-gooders, people who are into Me Too, and listening to false victims and gang stalking and destroying people that they decide to target, and that was it. So I've experienced it, but I know for each woman, he even uses the name, the pet names that you have. So there is no confusion that there is, for the majority of his videos, he has an audience of one that's his target. Yes, he likes having his other fans and everyone commenting going, oh, I can relate to this, or my ex-boyfriend did that to me. But what he's describing and what he's cataloguing on the internet is what he has done, which is another tool for him getting away. Because if you, as the vulnerable woman who's just had something horrible happened to you by him, he then basically admits it, explains it on a video. You think, well, what chance do I possibly have? He constantly uses the term hiding in plain sight. He's not even hiding. It's not, he's reliant on you, the victim's hiding. And even myself, I can't go on that video, the one about me, and say, by the way, everyone, he's talking about me. He's talking about the documentary and my investigation, because we can't, we're not releasing it yet. We have to get all the evidence together. I'm in contact with, you know, we're trying to do everything properly. So we have to hold back before we say anything. And in the same way, you wouldn't have been able to go on and write and say, actually, this is about me and this is really what happened, because he's already set you up in the video as someone who's got borderline personality disorder. And I think if anyone went and listened to any of the videos where he mentions borderline personality disorder, he's talking about you. And spoiler alert, does not have borderline personality disorder.
Ready to be diagnosed by licensed therapist, psychiatrist, whoever you want, I'm ready. So that let him then decide if I have borderline personality or not. Absolutely ready. Up to you.
So he comes out for this second visit. You've set him up to be this basically superstar genius. You're his manager, his agent, his publicist, his introductory person for high society, basically where you live, very respected people. And he must have felt like he won the lottery. But what you're explaining as well is this shift. He shifted it from, you're his patient and he's a therapist. And then obviously Lydia gets brought in because she's listening to all. So you automatically have to trust her. Then they push the boundary of having arguments in front of you. Oh, we're like family. So he's renaming, relabeling and normalizing these strange boundary expansions. So what happens then at this point when you've created this?
Well, boundary expansions, what Sam is doing, by the way, constantly, his favorite techniques, is double bind. He's double binding you about everything. And it works. It does work because it's literally cutting your brain into pieces. For example, there was this case. I remember I was in Skopje because he was breaking already boundaries millions of times. But then he makes something that you feel, wow, he's taking care of your boundaries. He's so great, really. I can trust him even more. And when I thought that he was breaking my boundaries, stupid me, how could I think that about this person? I will give you an example. I remember I was in Skopje and I had with me one of the Birkin bags. So it was with me. Lydia took this bag and she was like, oh, I like this bag. I also want to have this bag. And I swear you, I was so much in love with their family, I would just fly to Paris and buy and bring it for her. I said, okay, Lydia, when do you have your birthday? I will arrange this bag for you. And Sam was there like, Lydia, immediately stop that. What are you doing? This is unacceptable. This is breaking of boundaries. No way. You should never accept anything from... No, don't even mention this. Forget that. This never happened. Lydia, you need to educate yourself. What are you talking about? Boundaries are the most important thing with my clients. I know now that it was just a show in front of my eyes, you know. Coordinated show of two actors. But back then, it had its effect.
There's so much of what he says is the most remarkable contradiction of what he does himself.
Exactly.
And then when he pushes it with you and the other, I'm going to use the word victims rather than clients because that's what you all are. If you push back against anything, he uses the splitting. So it's but what he's done is he has created a new, but he's literally inserted new beliefs.
Absolutely. absolutely.
And you're rewired your brain. And this is what he described in detail that he would do. He would do a hostile takeover. He would invade every part of you. You have no ability almost to choose. And if you show any signs of that autonomy, then you're in big trouble. And you almost got away from him.
Once you're showing signs of autonomy later on, you are punished, severely punished. He knows to be really cruel. And you also don't realize what's happening because you shift blame on yourself.
So when did things then progress? And I know it's a long story and each part is important, but if we can... I don't know what the best way to sort of dive bomb into when things really start changing and he completely reframes your relationship. He's already, as you say, he was setting things up about this throwing of the chair in the argument and hold on, you don't know what's going on here. And basically what he's done is laid a foundation for where he's going to reveal that he's actually deeply in love with you. I'm going to pause here. And no, this story is not about to take a romantic turn. Sam is not in love with Anne or anyone. He is incapable of love. This is just a game to him, with real life players. And this is the turning point where everything shifted. Remember, up until this point, he's not laid a hand on her. Lydia has been present. They are like her extended family. Remember what Mark said previously. This is the point where you've completely lost yourself and you don't even know it. In the next episode of The Narcissist Playbook, Sam claims his time in prison was the catalyst for becoming a healer.
Would I have been able to be the good guy had I not been the bad guy? I don't think so. I think the bad guy was training for being the good guy.
And being the good guy is lucrative.
It's less risky, it's more rewarding, it's in many ways, also financially. I mean, cold therapy is, not a cheap therapy. Only very rich people can afford it, so I'm becoming rich in the process.
But it's not just money he wants to make. His goal is much darker.
His aim is to make woman commit suicide, to kill herself with her own hands.
The storyteller Narcissist Playbook is written, produced and edited by me, Isla Traquair, and it's the fourth in the Storyteller series. This is an independent production and I rely on you, the listeners, to help spread the word by showing your support. It doesn't cost anything, just a few clicks to like, share, subscribe and review. And soon there'll be extra content available on my Patreon for the price of a cup of coffee, including analysis, evidence, regular videos and more. Thank you for listening. If you've been affected by narcissistic abuse, there are links for support in the show notes.